fellow Tibetans are struggling. We have all the freedoms in exile to do something about it. So it is our responsibility. Now, the Tibetan community in Britain, so we are based in London and we do all of the events. Everything is basically organized by us. But I did learn how to read a little bit, and that's always stayed with me. They're not shouting at me because they're angry at me or they have a personal vendetta against me. It's because of what they're going through. So showing them that compassion, I think it is based on... So then I asked my mom, like, can I go to TCV summer camp in hopes, you know, that I would sort of find or feel more involved in my own identity. But now I think members of any community realize the impact China is having, the power that China is holding over their own governments. And I think that does frighten people. Keeping the cause of Tibet in your heart, in our hearts, is so important. Because if we don't do it, who's going to do it?
Unsilenced Voices of Young Tibetans is a podcast presented by the Foundation for Nonviolent Alternatives, where young Tibetans share their personal stories, experiences, opinions, and journey in exile.
Tesdale, namaste, and welcome to FNVA's podcast, Unsilenced Voices of Young Tibetans. Today, we have with us a Tibetan woman who has been actively advocating for Tibet in the United Kingdom. She is the youth and cultural coordinator of the Tibetan community in Britain. She is a doctor by profession and a VTAGer, and also the VTAG coordinator of UK. Welcome to our show, Dr. Tarala Mula.
Thank you. I think the Tamdala, the FNVA, Lejava Tangwa, the I'm really grateful that you have invited me to your podcast today and for all the work that your incredible organization does.
The pleasure is all ours, Dokla. So first thing is first, like, what brings you to India?
So I came for the ITYF Forum, so the International Tibet Youth Forum. This is the second one that's been done. And I came as a VTAGer, but also the UK new VTAG coordinator.
So I myself attended the first International Tibet Youth Forum and learned a lot of new things. Like, I believe you might have done the same. So what was your experience there? And were there any moment that you really thought, this is something that really, you know, stuck deep to my heart?
It was an incredible experience for most of us attendees. It was so nice to see so many young, interested Tibetans coming from all areas of the world, India, America, Australia, Europe. And we all came for a common cause and a common goal. We learned a lot from experienced activists and advocates, and also from the CTA staff themselves. In terms of the one moment or the one person that really stuck out to not just myself but probably the majority of the participants was Namgila, a political prisoner who's recently come from Tibet. And I think it really put the problems, the difficulties, the struggles our brothers and sisters in Tibet are facing into real perspective, and really encouraged us all to be working even harder for the Tibet cause.
There you go. I wanted to ask this question later, but since you brought up Namgila, like, being a Tibetan, like, we are born in a free and independent country where we can basically do what we want, something that our sisters and brothers inside Tibet cannot do. So what did you feel when Namgila was speaking? I mean, everybody felt emotional, that is a fact. But what was some of the things that resonated deeply? I believe your channel, London Ne, like, which you are part of, they put out a nice reel. So could you shed more light on it?
So just a disclaimer, I'm not really a part of London. I just work very closely with the founders. They're my respected elders. And whenever they want me to do anything for them, I always say yes. Yep. But they do a really good job. And I think the credit must go to them wholly. Yep. In terms of what I felt listening to Namgila was, one, that this was a real voice from Tibet speaking to us about, she was speaking to us about the things that she's gone through and other Tibetans have gone through. I think we can sometimes hear stories or read about them, but when you hear and see this firsthand, it really, really goes deep into your heart. And I think when Namgila mentioned, I wanted to ask Namgila a question myself, and that was, sometimes when you do advocacy or activism for Tibet, there's a creeping doubt or a fear that sometimes, am I making things worse for the people in Tibet? And I think one of the other participants asked a similar type of question. And I think Namgila's response really made me feel like, okay, no, our fellow Tibetans are struggling. We have all the freedoms in exile to do something about it. So it is our responsibility. It's not just something we should, some of us should be doing, but we all should be doing. And then I understand that some people, obviously it's a different story. They have close family members in Tibet still. That's the transnational repression there, unfortunately. But for all of us who aren't in that situation, I think it was really an eye-opener and like a light. So when the candles lit, that this is what we need to be doing.
Indeed, you definitely shared what Namgila resonated and also brought out the interesting point of what's happening, like these transnational aggression and repressioning. But moving on, like going to your personal level, like you are from a multicultural background. Yes. I watched your episode at London, so know a yeah. bit, but I believe our audience would also like to know more. So being from such a background, there definitely might have been challenges and also opportunities. So how did you overcome and came across all these things?
Yeah, so I think if I go back to like my background, so I my mom is Tibetan. My dad is half German, half Scottish. And I was actually born in Germany. I lived there until I was about 4 or 5 years old. And then because of my dad's work, we moved to London. And London is the first time I actually saw many other Tibetan people. I was very young then, but my mom was very keen for me to be involved. We went to do Tibetan performances. I got to perform in front of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And I went to Tibetan school, although it was very different to how it is now. Back then, we didn't really have the facilities and it was more of a place that I could feel Tibetan rather than actually learning much Tibetan. But I did learn how to read a little bit, and that's always stayed with me. When I was about 11, though, we moved to Japan. And then after that, I was in Singapore. So actually, for most of my sort of teenage years, I wasn't with any Tibetan community members. Like, I didn't know other Tibetans, really, unless I was seeing family and friends abroad. And even in my own home, of course, my dad doesn't understand Tibetan. So we used to speak in English. It was only my mom who would speak to me in Tibetan. So at some point, I felt like maybe my Tibetan-ness, I wasn't so sure. Like, I felt it in my heart, but I couldn't really speak the language. I didn't really hang out with other Tibetans. So what made me Tibetan? So then I asked my mom, like, can I go to TCE summer camp? In hopes, you know, that I would sort of find or feel more involved in my own identity. It was a really good experience for me. I didn't learn as much Tibetan as I wanted to, but I think it's just because it's not the easiest language to learn if you've not been speaking it all the time. But that was when I decided I was going to speak to every Tibetan person I know in Tibetan as much as possible so I could improve my Tibetan to a level that I would feel comfortable and more confident speaking to anyone and everyone. But I did leave with a sense of community, with a sense of I'm a Tibetan and these are my brothers and sisters here in TCV. And that made me feel, okay, what about my brothers and sisters in Tibet? So then that's when the sort of feeling of wanting to be more Tibetan, wanting to not just be Tibetan by blood, but also by the root being Tibetan, that really came across. But then again, I was abroad. I moved back to the UK to attend medical school in Southampton when I was 18. And I think then was the big change because finally I was back in the Tibetan community.
Yep. Yeah. So you mentioned TCV. I'm someone also who graduated from TCV. And growing up also, like before joining TCV, I was enrolled in a Tibetan school. And similar to your experience, like it was only with family members that I would get to engage. And we also had this, like you mentioned, like a Tibetan school. There was not a school. Like it would be like some senior Tibetans just teaching us Tibetan.
I think it's a similar thing for me. So I mentioned school, but actually that's what it was. It was one very respected Gyanlam who's unfortunately passed on. And children who were 5 years younger than me and children who were 5 years older than me. And in a room like this, maybe 6 or 7 of us gathered here. But it was still something that, you know, made me feel more Tibetan.
For me personally, I just learned the numbers during that time and the alphabets of Tibetan. But afterwards, like I joined the TCV and learned more. But on that note, Tarala, like What is the situation of these very schools? I think it's much larger, much more elaborate, much more vibrant these days. So could you shed much light on it? Because you yourself are a coordinator of the Tibetan community in Britain.
So we do have an excellent Sunday school now, and they have a parents committee, and they all work very hard, and there are many respected Gyanlas there. Some have been teaching there since when I was a child, and so they've really dedicated a lot of time and effort. And there are four classes at the moment. They're separated by age group, and they don't only learn how to speak Tibetan. They start their morning with the prayers. They have damye classes, so Tibetan lutes. And in the summer, they also learn for different performances. So we can perform at Tunga. So each of the classes have their own. Usually it's a parent who volunteers and who helps teach them a performance so that we can have a nice and vibrant celebration for His Holiness.
That's very interesting. Like, even though we are not in Tibet, like our the place of our very ancestors, like we are still doing our utmost through the guidance of our elder generation, through the visionary leadership of His Holiness, to preserve our very unique culture. So it's very encouraging and inspiring for me to hear such things. And like you said, you moved to Southampton, pursued your profession. You are a doctor right now. And being a doctor, like I have a younger sister who is doing nursing. She is a nurse right now. So
yeah.
I think Buddhism and being a Tibetan, you know, like when you do see these sort of profession, you interact with other people. So I think that elements of being a Buddhist or being a Tibetan for that matter, you know, what push does it have? Like, does it make you do your work differently compared to others? Like,
So I am a GP or a general practitioner. I guess in other countries, it might be a family doctor. Mm-hmm. And I work in a very like time-constrained, busy, stressful environment. So I have a new patient every 10 or 15 minutes, sometimes with multiple problems. Sometimes I'm supervising other staff, other doctors, other nurses. And it can really be quite tough. And unfortunately, sometimes patients or their family members can get very angry, very upset, shout. And it's not great, but I think being a Tibetan and a Buddhist, it does help me because I can show them more compassion. Compared to my colleagues who I work with say, actually, you handle that situation very calmly. And I say back to them, actually, it's because they're struggling or they're suffering or they're in pain. You know, these are the things they're going through. They're not shouting at me because they're angry at me or they have a personal vendetta against me. It's because of what they're going through. So showing them that compassion, I think it is based on being brought up in a Tibetan culture, being brought up under the guidance of His Holiness. And I think that's something that many people would strive to also improve. I mean, I can definitely still improve my patients and stuff, but I think many of my colleagues actually said, this is really interesting that you can remain so calm. Maybe we need to look more into some mindfulness or some Buddhism. So I think it does make an impact.
And when you mentioned mindfulness, I remember, you know, like when the US delegation visited His Holiness recently, the one leading it, Representative Michael McCall, he said the same thing to His Holiness, like, I should be taking a class of mindfulness. So it's interesting of how, you know, like, even though we Tibetans are currently occupied and, you know, in many ways, we are restricted, I believe, to a certain extent. But our identity, our culture, our way of life resonates deeply with the whole entire world. So it's very encouraging to see what you have been bringing to your own community in Britain, you know, beyond the Tibetan community. And moving on, like I've mentioned before that you are the youth coordinator and also the cultural coordinator of the Tibetan community in Britain. So what is their role in Britain and how many Tibetans are there in UK and how active have they been till now?
I think probably, I may be wrong, but there's over 2,000. We are a little bit scattered. Of the communities are a lot closer and all in a similar area, like in Toronto, for example. There's a big community all in one area. Mainly we're based in London, but we do have branches in different areas as well. Like we have TCB North, TCB Bristol, And they kind of come to us for guidance, but also geographically wise, they will have their own events. Of course, they're always invited to join our events, but it's not realistic to come for every single event all the way down 5-6 hours. Now, the Tibetan community in Britain, so we are based in London, and we do all of the events. Everything is basically organized by us. There are some additional events which may be organized by other organizations, but usually we work together. And I think that's one of the beautiful things in the Tibetan community in Britain is we are all quite united. There's not like, in Tibetan you say, we really aren't like that. I think we all try and work together because actually sometimes to build that sense of community, it is just nice to have that one thing that everyone works together for. So my role is the cultural secretary. So I'll talk about that first. So for me, I just want to promote our Tibetan culture because our culture is our identity and our culture is so rich and beautiful. We have our three provinces, but within those provinces, the language, the dress, the way of life can be so different. So I really like to promote different aspects of our culture and look through all of our cultural clothing from many years ago, which was brought over by Tibetans gradually over time. And I always try and say, actually, can we try and do a performance with this so we can showcase this another beautiful chapter of our culture? I also try to, we have two cultural secretaries. So together we try to see what else we can do to promote our culture. So we did Hafa Goshe. I know many other countries already have it, so we thought, let's just join it as well. And sometimes there's a bit of controversy about Hakka, but I think we push all of that aside. The key point is we want Tibetans to have a space to come together, to enjoy aspects of their culture, and then the bigger you, that sense of enjoying together builds the community, and that community is how you get action done. So that was the aim behind that. In terms of sort of the youth coordinator side, we've organized many workshops. We've collaborated with the Tibet support groups, which I think is so important because they've done so much hard work over the years. And to be honest, I'm not a Tibet expert. I feel like my knowledge is actually very minimal. I always come to them for advice and support. So we, for example, we had Dr. Gyalo come. That was amazing, telling us about the colonial boarding schools. We've had workshops with the staff from Free Tibet, telling us about the campaign updates. Sometimes we don't even know what's actually going on, and it's so important that. So we just wanted to make sure that our youth were fully aware so that if someone asked them about Tibet, they know what to say. They know what's going on. We had Kate Saunders as well, who's a research fellow here with you guys. And she did a talk about cybersecurity. And all of those things are topics that we may have seen on a reel in Instagram or know a little bit about, but most people don't do a lot of research. So getting these experts in, explaining to us face-to-face, really makes you understand more about what's going on so that you then feel like, okay, I feel empowered to then speak to one of the MPs or to speak to a news outlet about what's going on. You feel that sort of confidence and that courage to do that.
Like you mentioned a very strong point here, because I've been intimated by certain, you know, Tibetan researchers or whatnot. They say that sometimes their research works are unfortunately not read by others, but also by Tibetans. So that's a very sorry state. But hearing what you and especially the Tibetan community in Britain is doing is like sharing their information to the Tibetan youth, and not only Tibetan youth, to everybody. I think it's a very nice way to sort of not only advocate, but to understand the problem. I think that's sometimes we fall back, like you say, these days it's like an instant world where you just want things quickly. So this is a really nice exercise, and I myself, being a researcher, would definitely like you and your organization to carry this forward, because it's very encouraging for us researchers as well to see that our work is being read and, you know, like looked into. So thank you so much for that. So moving on, like recently the UK election happened.
Yes.
And a big result, you know, yeah. Labour won massively. And incidentally, it was during their time that a certain policy shift happened to Tibet. I mean, Many people might also not call it a policy shift, but there was a statement sort of suggesting that the Britain policy of suzerainty of Tibet was moved away by its declaration by the then Foreign Secretary, you know, David Miliband, saying Tibet is part of PRC.
Yeah.
So with them coming back to power after 14 long years, like you and your organization have been very much lobbying, campaigning, working together with different MPs in the United Kingdom. What do you think this sort of change would result for the Tibetan freedom movement?
It's difficult because Labour's are back in power. And unfortunately, last time they were in power, as you said, they made that statement. But I feel like the current Labour government is different than the previous one. So I think rather than feeling too disheartened, I think this statement, or no, remembering the statement, should be an eye-opener to us Tibetans in the UK that we've got to work hard now, because we need to be making sure that Labour don't make a similar statement or redact this statement and actually make a positive statement for Tibet and all the people that are suffering there. And the only way that we can do that is by the Tibetans in Britain going to the local MPs, making sure to speak out, working together with them to make sure that such a statement is never said in the UK Parliament again.
On top of this, like, I remember one big event that you guys held, I think, was it this year or last year, where the focus was, why does Tibet matter?
Yes.
Right? So could you share more light on that event?
Yeah. So this was actually an event run by previous ex-council members and elders in the community who've been, you know, since coming to the UK many, many years ago, they've been always working for the Tibet cause. And they felt that this was such an important topic at the moment, because one of the reasons was because there's some divisions in the Tibetan community, not necessarily in the UK, but just generally all over the world. So Chöra Chulu, the Umalam, so middle way versus freedom. So all of those kind of things. The key point is like, Tibetans in Tibet and what we can do for our country. So it was just an idea of how we can unite, how we can remember what's happening, and how we can re-encourage people to be active, to advocate and step up. Because we do have, we are grateful, we have an all-party parliamentary group for Tibet in the UK. It's chaired by a Conservative member, Tim Lowton, who's very active on the Tibet issue. There are actually some, at least one Labour MP is in there. But I think now is the time that we want to try and get more. So given that some important issues are coming up, like His Holiness's succession, it was really important that we get everyone involved, as many people as possible, because advocacy isn't something that one person can achieve. It's the whole community that needs to do it together. So that's why they did this event. I found it really, really helpful. I spoke in Tibetan, unfortunately. It was a last-minute thing that I was requested to do. But I think it was helpful, and I know many people have seen it. And maybe what some of the more experienced people said resonated a bit more. But I think it is important, and I think it is a wake-up call for Tibetans in the UK, but everywhere else as well.
Indeed, it was not only the elder people who said, you know, their words strongly resonated, but even what you and even Damon who spoke there, like, yeah, it definitely resonated deeply with us youngsters, you know, for us to do more, to take inspiration from what you said. So it was very nice program.
Oh,
and I hope it becomes an annual thing, you know, hopefully. And, you know, like something that has been capturing the attention of UK and even mine for that matter is, like, you know, these days with China rising, there is a lot of conflicts happening. And there was this Kavanaugh incident, like the piano guy.
Oh, yes.
Are you aware
yes,
of
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
So what's the general public view of Britishers right now to China as a government, not the people? I think we should differentiate that sometimes, you know?
Yeah. So I think for the government, yeah, the British public don't like the Chinese government is the general view I get from my day-to-day life and being at work. And I think it is because everyone has a need to feel like wants to be free. Everyone wants to have their rights. And China is in the background controlling so many things, and people have finally clued up. Before, obviously, we knew what was going on because we have an interest in that area because our people are suffering. But now I think members of any community realize the impact China is having, the power that China is holding over their own governments. And I think that does frighten people. And I think that video was because of how the supporters of the CCP were acting. It really highlighted that actually, no, this is an issue that everyone needs to be aware of. And this is slightly a different thing that's happened to us recently as well. But maybe because of retaliation of that, we've had more pro-China protesters coming to our protests. Mm-hmm. So like anti-protesters, I guess you could say. But even then, the general public walking past the protests were looking at them like, what are they doing here? You know, what are they even here for? And they weren't listening to what they were saying. They were just thinking these people are just trying to, you know, divert attention. But I think it might have been maybe related to the incident with the piano. Yeah.
It's very interesting, you know, like seeing such, you know, firm opposition coming from different countries. Like recently in Australia, we could see these, you know, Tibetan, not only Tibetan, like Hong Kongers, Uyghurs. We have all those coming together and, you know, protesting against the Chinese government.
Yeah.
But you also have these other sides clashing together.
Yeah.
So this is a very interesting point that you brought up. So unfortunately, we are running short on time right now. So finally, I would like to ask you whether you have any messages to our Tibetans worldwide, especially our Tibetan sisters and brothers in occupied Tibet, and also to the plethora of Tibet supporters, which you rightly mentioned, they play a very crucial role.
Yeah, so, I mean, firstly, to our brothers and sisters in Tibet, I mean, we will always continue to fight for your rights, for your freedoms, for your safety. That's something that is not what we should be doing, but it's our responsibility here, being free and in exile. To my fellow brothers and sisters in exile, I mean, we all have busy lives. We all have other things going on. I myself sometimes feel like, oh, sometimes I'm not doing much. Sometimes I'm doing more. That's fine. But keeping the cause of Tibet in your heart, in our hearts, is so important. Because if we don't do it, who's going to do it, right? Ultimately, the responsibility falls on our shoulders, and this is a responsibility that we cannot ignore. It's the atrocities being faced by our people are just too immense. In terms of the Tibet support groups, Tibet supporters actually in general, we're so grateful actually, not just because the unwavering support, but the knowledge, the experience that you bring is basically like beyond. Yeah, I'm beyond grateful for it. I've found that every, actually Tibetan or Tibet supporter that I've gone to, initially you feel a little bit shy and feel like maybe they don't want to interact with you. Every person that I've spoken to, I can 100% say was so open to speaking to me, because they could feel like, okay, that this person wants to do something for Tibet. Right, this is our common goal. I never felt a situation of, you know, they were looking down on me, even with the most simple questions that I have. And I think that really highlighted the collaboration that we need to have, the Tibetans and the Tibet supporters, in making sure that ultimately our brothers and sisters in Tibet get the rights that they deserve.
So thank you so much, Dr. Tarulomula. On that note, like, I remember my latest book that I read was one by a famous Tibet supporter. He's also a British historian, Patrick French,
yeah.
Tibet. So on that note, I think one should read such books to know more on Tibet. And you coming on our platform here, sharing, you know, your own personal journey from a young Tibetan, from a young kid to right now, you know, leading the Tibetan community in various capacity, be it VTAC. It's very encouraging. So thank you so much, Dr. Tarulomula.
Thank you for giving me this platform as well. As I said before, we are so grateful for all the work that FNVA also do.
For more updates and videos by FNVA, click on the link and please subscribe to our channel. Thank you for watching.